Welcome to the deep dive. Have you ever, just stopped and watched your shadow on a sunny day?
Oh, yeah.
In the morning, it's super long, right? Then by noon, it's like tiny, right at your feet. And then towards evening, it stretches way out again, but the other way. Kind of makes you wonder, is the sun doing this little dance across the sky for us? Or is something, much bigger going on?
Well, that everyday shift, the light and shadow, it's actually a beautiful clue, isn't it?
A clue to what?
It's hinting at these huge, precise movements of our own planet, just dancing through space.
Okay. And that's exactly what we're diving into today.
Perfect.
This deep dive is all about those, well, fundamental movements of Earth, our home, and its companion, the moon, and of course, the sun, the star that powers everything here.
Right.
So our goal really is just to give you a clear, kind of engaging overview of these core ideas, from the daily rhythms that shape our lives.
So like day and night.
Exactly. All the way to those really spectacular things we sometimes see up there.
And understanding these movements, I mean, it's been fundamental for humans forever, hasn't it?
How so?
Well, think about ancient farmers tracking seasons to plant crops, or even today, scientists predicting climate patterns. These big cosmic mechanics, they're woven into our existence.
So they literally dictate our days, nights, seasons.
Even those amazing eclipse moments, it's this incredible cosmic ballet we're all part of.
Okay, let's start with the first step in that ballet then. The Earth's daily spin. We call it rotation. I always picture like a figure skater doing a really smooth spin.
That's a great analogy. Rotation is just that spinning around an internal line, an imaginary axis,
And for Earth, that axis goes
through
through.
North and South poles. But here's a key thing. It's not straight up and down compared to our path around the sun. It's tilted
Tilted by how much?
by about 23.5 degrees. And Earth spins from west to east. So if you look down from above the North Pole, it'd look
Okay,
counterclockwise.
west to east. And one full spin takes.
Just under 24 hours, that's our basic solar day. Though, astronomers are more precise, they talk about a sidereal day too.
Sidereal. What's that?
It's measured against the distant stars, and it's slightly shorter, about 23 hours and 56 minutes. But for everyday life, 24 hours is what matters.
Got it. So if we're constantly spinning, what's the most obvious effect we feel, or rather see?
The most obvious has to be the day and night cycle. Simple as that.
Right.
As Earth turns, different parts face the sun, get lit up, that's day. Then they turn away from the light, that's night. It's this constant, smooth transition. Sunrise, daytime, sunset, night, over and over.
It makes total sense when you say it, but it still fools our eyes, because the other big effect is the apparent motion of celestial bodies.
Ah, yes, the
It
illusion.
really looks like the sun rises in the east, travels across the sky, sets in the west, the moon does it, the stars do it. But that's not what's actually happening.
Nope, exactly right. It's like being in a fast train. The trees outside look like they're zooming backwards, but they're standing still. It's you moving.
So the sun isn't moving across our sky.
We are moving. Earth is rotating. The sun, moon, stars seem to move because our viewpoint is constantly changing.
Okay, that clicks. But there's one star that doesn't seem to move much, right? The pole star.
That's right, Polaris or Dhruvatara. It appears fixed in the northern sky because Earth's axis happens to point almost directly at it. Super useful for navigation historically.
Okay, here's a fact flash that just blows my mind. At the equator, because of the spin, you're moving at something like 1,670 kilometers per hour.
Roughly, yes. It's incredibly fast.
Faster than a jet plane. So why don't we like fly off or feel it at all?
It's because everything around us is moving at that same speed. The ground, the air, the buildings, you, me, everything.
Ah, so there's no relative motion to feel. Like being inside that fast train, you don't feel the speed unless it changes.
Exactly. And understanding this helps bust some common myths. Like, the sun doesn't really travel across the sky?
We just rotate.
Yes. And night isn't the sun turning off or hiding behind the earth?
It's just our side of the Earth rotating away from the sunlight.
Precisely.
Okay, that makes sense. So that's the daily spin, the rotation. But while Earth's doing that pirouette, it's also on a much bigger journey, right? A year-long trip around the sun.
That's the next act, revolution. A beautiful way to think about it.
So what is revolution, technically?
Revolution is just the movement of one object around another object along a fixed path or orbit.
And Earth's path around the sun isn't a circle, you said?
Correct. It's an ellipse, sort of an oval shape. And the sun isn't perfectly in the center, it's at one of the focus points of that ellipse.
Which means our distance from the sun changes.
It does, yeah. We have a closest point called perihelion, usually around January 3rd.
Wait, January, isn't that winter in the northern hemisphere?
It is, and that's a crucial point. Our farthest point, aphelion, is around July 4th.
Summer for the north.
Right, so this varying distance, it is absolutely not the cause of our seasons. That's probably the biggest misconception out there about this.
Okay, hold that thought on seasons. First, how long does this whole revolution trip take? That defines our year, right? And what's the deal with leap years?
Good question. One full revolution takes about 365 days and just shy of 6 hours.
365 and a quarter days, basically.
Pretty much. We call that a solar year. But our calendar normally has just 365 days. So those extra almost 6 hours, they add up.
Uh-huh.
Over 4 years, 6 hours times four is 24 hours a whole extra day.
Ah, so that's the leap day.
Exactly. We add that extra day to February every 4 years, a leap year, just to keep our calendar synced up with Earth's actual position in its orbit and, importantly, with the seasons. Pretty clever, really.
Very clever. Okay, so now tell me, if the distance doesn't cause seasons, what does? You mentioned the tilt earlier.
Yes. It all comes down to the tilt of Earth's axis. That 23.5 degree angle we talked about with rotation, that tilt stays pointed in the same direction relative to the distant stars as we orbit the sun.
Okay, the tilt is fixed as we go around.
Right. So think about it. When the northern hemisphere is tilted toward the sunlight hits it more directly, more concentrated. And the days are longer.
That sounds like summer.
That is summer.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, the southern hemisphere is tilted away from the sun. It gets less direct sunlight, the light is more spread out, and the days are shorter.
Winter down there.
Exactly. Then, 6 months later, Earth is on the other side of the sun, but the tilt is still pointing the same way in space. Now, the southern hemisphere is tilted towards the sun.
Summer for them, winter for us in the north.
You got it. And spring and autumn, those happen around the equinoxes.
Equinoxes.
Yeah. The points in the orbit where neither hemisphere is tilted significantly towards or away from the sun. Mm-hmm. So sunlight is spread pretty evenly, and day and night are roughly equal in length everywhere.
And these points have names, right? Solstices and equinoxes.
They do. We have the summer solstice around June 21st, longest day in the northern hemisphere, the winter solstice around December 22nd, shortest day for the north. Then the vernal or spring equinox around March 20th, and the autumnal equinox around September 23rd. Those are the equal day and night points, roughly.
Does this revolution affect anything else? Like what we see at night.
Oh, absolutely. As we move around the sun, our nighttime view of the universe changes. That's why you see certain constellations like Orion prominently in the winter sky, but others like Scorpius in the summer sky. Our perspective shifts.
And it affects life on Earth too, right? Like farming.
Definitely. Agricultural cycles, animal migrations. So much is tied to the predictable rhythm of the seasons, which comes from revolution and tilt.
So just to hammer it home,
mm-hmm.
Seasons are caused by the tilt, not how close we are to the sun.
Cannot stress that enough. In fact, remember, the Earth is closest to the sun during the northern hemisphere's winter.
Mind blown again. And seasons aren't the same everywhere, are they?
No, not at all. Near the equator, the tilt doesn't make as much difference, so the seasons are much less pronounced. But near the poles, you get extremes like months of constant daylight in summer or constant darkness in winter.
Wow, okay. Rotation revolution. Tilt.
Yeah.
Got it. Now, let's talk about the really dramatic stuff. Cosmic alignments. Eclipses.
Ah, the spectacles.
I mean, imagine the sun just disappearing midday.
Yeah.
Or the full moon turning blood red. What exactly is happening?
It's pretty straightforward conceptually. An eclipse is just when one object in space blocks the light from another, casting a shadow.
Simple, but the effect is huge.
And what makes solar eclipses, especially total ones, so incredible is this amazing cosmic coincidence.
Coincidence.
Yeah. The sun is enormous, right? About 400 times wider than our moon. But it's also about 400 times farther away from us than the moon is.
Whoa.
So from our viewpoint here on Earth, they end up looking almost exactly the same size in the sky. It's this amazing proportional accident.
That is amazing. It means the moon can perfectly cover the sun.
Exactly. That's the key to a total solar eclipse.
So tell me about solar eclipses. What's the alignment?
For a solar eclipse, the lineup is sun, moon, Earth. The moon passes directly between the sun and us.
Blocking the sun's light.
And casting its shadow onto a part of Earth. This only happens during the new moon phase, when the moon is dark from our perspective.
Are there different kinds?
Yes. A total solar eclipse is the big one. That's when the moon completely blocks the sun's bright disk. You have to be in the very center of the moon's shadow, the umbra, to see it. And then you can actually see the sun's faint outer atmosphere, the corona. It's stunning.
Wow. What else?
Well, if you're in the lighter outer part of the shadow, the penumbra, you see a partial solar eclipse where the moon only covers part of the sun.
Okay.
And sometimes the moon is a bit farther away in its orbit, so it looks slightly smaller than the sun. If it passes right in front, then it doesn't cover the sun completely, leaving a bright ring visible around the moon. That's an annular solar eclipse, often called the Ring of Fire.
Ring of Fire. Sounds amazing, but also maybe dangerous to look at.
Yes. And this is incredibly important, a critical warning.
Okay, listening.
For any solar eclipse, total, partial, annular, you must never look directly at the sun without proper specialized eye protection.
Not even regular sunglasses.
Absolutely not. They don't block nearly enough of the harmful radiation. You need certified eclipse glasses, special solar filters for telescopes or binoculars, or you can use a pinhole projector to view it indirectly.
So the danger is the intense light, not some weird eclipse rays.
Exactly. Even a tiny sliver of the actual sun's surface exposed during an eclipse can cause permanent eye damage, even blindness, very quickly. Please, please be safe if you ever get to see one.
Message received.
Yeah.
Seriously. Okay, now what about lunar eclipses? The moon is involved again, but the setup is different.
Right. For a lunar eclipse, the alignment is sun-earth-moon. This time, Earth gets in the middle.
So Earth blocks the sunlight from reaching the moon.
Precisely. Earth casts its shadow onto the moon, and this happens only during the full moon phase.
And can more people see these?
Yes, that's a big difference. A lunar eclipse is visible from anywhere on the night side of Earth where the moon is above the horizon. Much wider visibility than a solar eclipse.
What about that blood moon thing? Is that real?
It is. During a total lunar eclipse, when the entire moon passes through Earth's darkest shadow, the umbra, it often takes on this reddish, coppery glow.
Why red?
It's because sunlight is filtering through Earth's atmosphere all around the edge of the planet. Our atmosphere scatters away most of the blue light, but the red light passes through and gets bent or refracted onto the moon's surface.
Cool. So Earth's sunsets are basically projected onto the moon.
That's a great way to think about it. We also have partial lunar eclipses, where only part of the moon goes through the umbra, and penumbral lunar eclipses, where the moon just passes through Earth's fainter outer shadow. Those are very subtle, just a slight dimming.
And safety for watching these.
Good news here. Lunar eclipses are completely safe to watch with your naked eyes.
Oh, good.
Binoculars, telescopes, whatever you like. You're just looking at the moon, which is reflecting sunlight, and it's never bright enough to harm your eyes.
Phew. Okay, that leads to a really good question, though. I think Ananya, in our source material, asked this. If we have a new moon and a full moon every month, why don't we get a solar and lunar eclipse every single month, too? The alignments seem like they should happen all the time.
It's an excellent question and a very logical one. The answer is, again, about orbits and tilt. The moon doesn't orbit Earth in the exact same flat plane that Earth orbits the sun.
Oh, it's tilted, too.
Yes, the moon's orbit is tilted by about 5 degrees relative to Earth's orbital plane, which we call the ecliptic.
So most of the time when it's a new moon or full moon, the moon is slightly above or slightly below that perfect alignment needed to cast a shadow on Earth or pass through Earth's shadow.
Exactly. The sun, Earth, and moon only line up perfectly or close enough for an eclipse when the moon is crossing Earth's orbital plane near the new or full phase. These crossing points are called nodes, and the alignment only happens occasionally.
Oh, that makes sense. It needs that extra bit of orbital alignment.
Precisely. It's all about geometry and space.
So we've covered the daily spin rotation, the yearly journey revolution, and its key partner, the tilt-causing seasons. And these amazing but rarer alignments that give us eclipses.
Yeah, it really pulls together the fundamental ways our little corner of the solar system works, doesn't it?
It really does. These grand movements dictating so much of our experience here.
It emphasizes how these things that seem so distant, you know, celestial mechanics, actually shape the rhythm of our lives right here on Earth.
Totally. So maybe the next time you notice your shadow changing length through the day, or you spot Orion rising on a cold winter night.
Or maybe you're lucky enough to see an eclipse.
Remember the incredible cosmic dance that's making it all happen? It's pretty cool how simple things you can just, you know, see every day reveal this huge grand ballet happening around us.
Absolutely. And, you know, connecting it all back, it just highlights how profoundly everything from the length of our day, the warmth of our seasons, maybe even the food we grow, it all depends on this remarkably precise ongoing cosmic performance. It really governs the rhythm of life itself.